So my name is Rachel Knudsen. I will be co-presenting with Erin Malone, my colleague here. And today we want to talk about how to improve public health through non-traditional partnerships. And we have no relationships to disclose. So we want to accomplish three things today. We want to first identify non-traditional public health partners and then talk a little bit about the potential impact they can have on public health. We want to discuss some common challenges and barriers in collaborating with these types of organizations. And then lastly, we'll go through some strategies and approaches for kind of sustaining these partnerships over the long term. So before we identify non-traditional partners, it is important to understand just the value of partnership in public health. So, you know, we've highlighted a subset of benefits here. I won't walk through them all, but I'll just highlight a few. So with partnership, there is the opportunity to pool risk, to pool costs and resources. So this kind of decreases the burden on any one organization and can also kind of help expand the scope of work, given some of the additional inputs or assets from partners that are coming to the table. You know, non-traditional partnerships specifically further the objectives of Health in All policies as they build transparency, they garner public trust, you have communities coming together, different sectors coming together, and facilitates buy-in from public and private stakeholders. And then lastly, in terms of dissemination, partnerships are great communication channels, so, you know, getting out new research, key findings or products into very different audiences is a benefit of partnership. So a lot of the previous presentations have touched on health system transformation. So we know the health system is transforming rapidly for a number of reasons. The passing of the Affordable Care Act, now looking upstream and trying to incorporate social determinants of health into healthcare. So with all of this transformation, new opportunities are emerging for public health. And so what that means is that it's critical at this point in time that public health sort of reach out beyond the traditional sphere of partners to look at different sectors, different organizations that can either help fill some organizational capacity, enhance capacity and capability, and then move sort of the public health mission forward. So with a new ecosystem of partners comes inevitably a different set of challenges or barriers. So often, we all know this, speaking the same language is easier said than done. So, you know, in the case of a non-traditional partner, they may not understand the mission of public health, what you're trying to accomplish. They may not have health as their primary focus. So it's difficult to come up with mutually beneficial partnership objectives if the organizations at the table don't really see the win-win. Aligning timeframes is also, it can be a barrier to collaboration. So we know the cornerstone of public health is having very robust evidence base, and this takes time and resources to build. So coming up with a timeframe that makes sense for non-traditional partners that may need to see some short-term wins is something that requires a lot of thought and patience and going back to the table. Understanding the different motivating factors of non-traditional partners is key and is very difficult. So, for example, if you're looking to partner with a private sector organization, they may be looking for a return on the investment for a specific intervention or program. And so it's important that public health, you know, first recognize that that is a motivating factor for coming to the table and collaborating. But then also there is a need to be able to articulate what that return or what that impact might be. And then lastly, defining target populations can be challenging. So for example, if you have a health insurer that you're interested in working with, it may be challenging to, you know, help them see that looking past their beneficiary population can be beneficial. So with that context, I'm going to turn it over to Erin, and she's going to walk us through a four-step process for engaging with non-traditional partners over the long run.
Thank you, Rachel. So I'm going to get a little bit more tangible or tactical in engaging with non-traditional partners. We kind of have that context and some of the barriers and challenges to engaging, but this four steps, whether you do them in sequence or not, are important to just learning how to engage, identifying, and starting to have conversations with non-traditional partners. So the first one is probably the most important and really lays the foundation for the next three. And this is identifying your objectives and your value proposition. So prior to engaging with any new partner, you want to be able to articulate why you're trying to engage. So Rachel went through some of the benefits to partnering earlier. So understanding if it's new communication channels or funding opportunities that you're trying to seek. Then also being able to state the value proposition. So looking internally, understanding the capabilities and skills your organization provides to a partnership. So instead of going into a conversation with just the ask, being able to say, this is how we can help you. So having that two-way conversation is really important and really sets up that foundation for engaging with new partners. So the second step is kind of assessing your current partner landscape. This helps you, mapping out who your current partners are, helps identify where there are some gaps maybe, or even some duplicity. So for example, this is kind of one example of a public health organization and who their current partners might be. You have a lot of academia and government represented, but maybe not any for-profit or a few payers or providers that you started conversations with. So being able to say where those gaps are and where maybe you have too many academic partners, are they all providing new and insightful research or partnership goals? Are they helping to spur your goals? Kind of asking those hard questions is a first step into kind of addressing and identifying new partners. Then you can start to kind of expand your viewpoint and realize that there is a whole ecosystem, as Rachel said, of partners out there. So after looking at who your current partners are, being able to understand that there is a ton of new partners out there is part of the second step. The third is conducting in-depth partner research. So this step actually helps you narrow down your focus again and helps you kind of identify where you want to target and who you want to target. So this example kind of shows this full view. By conducting research and on these partners, you can help understand their mission and goals prior to engaging. So being able to understand what maybe a large employer is looking to provide helps you either weed them out or also prioritize them as someone to engage with. So now that you have your kind of new set of priority partners, you can start prioritizing these based on your goals. So this is an example of one framework that you could use to help kind of prioritize where you want to spend your time and resources. So on the left-hand side, you have kind of your expected impact or influence on outcomes, both high and medium low. And then at the bottom, you have your relationship, if it's established, yes, no. And you can map kind of your partners that you have identified, and you can put them into some different quadrants and based on if they are, if you have a relationship or if their impact with them is supposed to be high impact or not. And this also actually goes into some tangible examples of each quadrant. So engaging strategically, you can really start to hone those conversations, set up monthly touch points, bring those partners in to talk about your goals and mutual benefits. Or you can just keep them informed by, sending them email blasts, but not dedicating time and resources to partners that might not have any benefits for your organization. So being very thoughtful about where you're putting your time and money. And finally, after you've started to identify and engage, it's important to understand how to sustain those relationships. So this is an example of kind of five steps that you can take, an action plan to continue long-term collaboration with partners. So you can start creating a targeted ask, identify the specific action that you want to do or take with this new partner. Also, defining the internal roles and establishing a relationship manager is very important, so that person can kind of drive that partnership. And then determining timing. So as I mentioned, is it monthly calls or is it just emailing out, you know, this organization every couple months, letting them know what's going on? And then finally, evaluating. As we all know in public health, we need to evaluate and be able to show impact. So being able to establish those goals from the front and showing how your partnership is reaching those goals helps drive that long-term collaboration. And that is it. So thank you so much for your time.
Is this the type of a concept that they would be interested in supporting with kind of another set of partners to provide some of the other capital? So I don't think it's something that you just kind of write into a grant application if we're going to change the contract type to a SID, but I think you can start to push them to think about the elements that we talked about of, you know, how can you be more flexible, but then also can they be a source of some of that working capital?
But you already have to have the grant, or the project.
You have to have some funding.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you can show the outcome, so then you can then get the SIP money. You have to have the outcomes first. You have to front load yourself. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that if you don't have to go to the month exactly in contact?
I think the biggest success in small organizations can do for themselves actually, especially to position themselves for social impact bonds,
yes,
or for the patient success program, to really establish a track record, right? A lot of focus on the data and the outcomes, or including the outcomes that they've achieved. And once those programs are able to show that, then those RFPs are coming out in this state. It's really very much in the community right now in the state. So once those RFIs actually are RFPs come out, then responding to those with a program, with those little proposals about what the program has done, what kind of track record it has, how it's been able to, some of them are evidence-based, so they actually have a really great sort of evaluation to show that that's the best thing for small organizations to do and to position themselves. And then it's really up to the issuer of the RFP or RFI to sort of determine what really are our social priorities. And sometimes they match up with certain small programs.
Where in Massachusetts are you? You're in Massachusetts?
Yes.
So, I mean, Harvard has a big SIP lab, but it's another resource that I would suggest, you know, looking at. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's the focus.
Okay.
Other questions?
Yes, please.
The reorg you talked about at the end, the checks and the finances for what you do and what you don't do. With the organizational buy-in of the facilitators, I guess, how would you actually change that? Like, what processes do you use back to get that buy-in that you just have?
I think targeting supervisors versus branch directors, because we have the buy-in from the branch director. They had been aware of all the changes they were had already gone through their own change process and had at that point bought into a lot of it. But if someone participated in the program that was 4 levels below the instructor and their direct supervisor maybe was also going through their own process of accepting changes, that would make it hard for the change facilitator to go back. So I think targeting supervisors and engaging them, saying this is what your staff person is going to go through, and your major support so that they can do staff training, and really be seen as an expert. I think part of it was supporting the staff, not necessarily implementing a process improvement, but supporting the staff through ensuring that staff had someone to go to if they were struggling with, like, there's this change and I don't know who to go to and I don't know how to personally deal with it. I'm moving offices, I don't know anyone at my new office. And so then the change facilitator would support that interpersonal issues, but also if there was sort of an activity that they could do at staff meeting, help people think about, we're in a big change right now. It feels bad. And we're going to talk about that. And then also leveraging our branch to bring additional training to their branch around. So what Christy did was engage us to go back to her branch and not just give training to change facilitators, but also to their whole branch around like crucial conversations, trust building, so that people felt like they had better, like more of those tools. So it wasn't, it was more of a soft skill. Soft skill.
Okay.
Do you have anything to add?
I felt like the role of change facilitator a lot of times was also to provide just more emotional support and understanding why we're even doing this change. A lot of staff were really removed from that director level of vision, and so we were kind of bridges for that.
Other questions? Yeah, I wasn't involved in that early part, and it was really Moss, our health officer, would be a good question to you. But there was a lot, they had a design team, so the first directors were engaged in really helping to design what it looked like. They had a team of people at the leadership level. So this program was really looking at like the front end of line and saying our leadership is engaged and has helped provide input into what this is going to look like. But our front end line hasn't been engaged, and so they're still processing this. So I think I wasn't involved.
I can ask about the Department of Health as well. We had another, if we were having an important question, we on the delivery side of the complete reorganization of post health reform. So everything from the higher level to the new chief, the new hospital and clinic, and so forth. So I think population health. Not so much the physical move, but to take advantage of having a smaller presence of those 2,000 people
I think it was helpful for me from the beginning to reframe the resistors as people who had questions that weren't answered yet. Like, they had really important concerns, and instead of framing it as, there was this common sort of way of talking about it, like, get on the train, it's moving, and you're on the train, and I'll leave you behind. But we can't talk about that. If somebody's, you know, really struggling with this change, you have to better understand why. Who's going to help us design, you know, kind of change this time for innovation. If you, it's like all the balls are up in the air, and everybody needs to provide input into what's going to look like. So I think reframing it, like, for at least help leaders reframe it that way, because leaders are way far ahead. They've known about the change for 2 years. They're like, I've processed this. I'm on board. And their staff haven't known that it was coming. They haven't had input into the design. So I think helping folks reframe it as, like, those who are digging in their heels have very important concerns, and then giving them space to get input. They might not get input into, like, the big vision that's already set, but what can they get input into? Might be something little, like something in, you know, in the move or in the process or the form, you know, where can they get input and where can they.
All right, so before you all leave today, please make sure that you use the app to evaluate this session. Thank you for joining us. Before you go, though, if you want to approach the panelists directly, if you didn't have a chance to ask your questions to the group, please join them really quickly for report. The next session starts. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's thank our panelists.